Today's Wednesday, December the 20th, God's salvation through history. We're going to look at a familiar one that we're all familiar with this evening. That is 1 Samuel 17. That is with David against Goliath. And Israel and the Philistines had set themselves in battle array against each other by the Valley of Elah. 1 Samuel 17 verses 1 and 2. Israel was on a mountain on one side, and the Philistines were on the mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them, according to verse 3 of chapter 17. The champion for the Philistines was Goliath of Gath, who was 9 foot 9 inches tall, according to 1 Samuel 17, verse 4. You consider the height of that, him being their champion, 9 foot 9 inches tall, pretty good size. He was equipped with a helmet of brass, a coat of mail weighing about 114 pounds, legs covered with brass, and a javelin of bronze, 1 Samuel 17, 5 and 6. The spear that Goliath had was like a weaver's beam, and that was a large beam that went across that the weavers had, probably like a 4x4 or something like that. And it had a spearhead that weighed around 14 pounds. And then, of course, he had one that was bearing a shield before him, according to verse 7. And he would come out and he would challenge the army of Israel for a man from Israel to fight with him. It'd be a one-on-one, and whoever won would be the servant of the other. So he came out morning and evening, and he issued this challenge to Israel, and he did so for 40 days. Well, David brings provisions to his brothers in the camp, and he hears the challenge presented by Goliath, and he sees all the men of Israel flee from Goliath, being afraid, in verses 17 through 24. And David can't believe that Israel is letting this uncircumcised Philistine defy the armies of the living God and speaks to the people about it. He just can't believe that they're letting this happen. And David's words come before Saul, and Saul sends for David. And David tells Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine," in verse 32. Remember, at this time, David's still just a young youth. And that's his idea. Let no man's heart fail because of the Philistine. I'm going to go and I'm going to fight him. Saul chides David that he is just a youth, and Goliath has been a man of war from his youth. So he had the experience and, of course, the great stature and the size and the weaponry. And Saul just doesn't see this possible. Verses 33. David relates to Saul of his encounter with the slaying of the lion and the bear, and place the deliverance on these from God, giving God the praise and the glory for it, and proclaim that God would deliver him out of the hand of the Philistine, out of the hand of Goliath. So David relates that, "I've already been in battles. God has seen me through it, and it was due to God that I've been able to accomplish that." So David refuses the armor and the sword provided by Saul and says, "Well, it's not been proved. He didn't want it." He refuses it. And he ends up taking only his staff, 5 smooth stones, and his sling, verses 38 through 40. To sling stones back then was an art form of battle that must have been very effective, because we'd already looked at in Judges chapter 20 and verse 16 that there were 700 men of Benjamin who, being left-handed, who everyone could sling stones at a hair's breadth and not miss. So they had it down to a fine art that they could sling these stones and not miss. So David approaches Goliath in his challenge, and Goliath curses David by his gods. Verses 42 and 43. David proclaims to Goliath that he was coming to Goliath in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom Goliath defied, and that God would deliver Goliath into his hands. Verses 45 and 46. So David's purpose is to give glory to God and for the Philistine to give God glory according to winning the battle in verses 46 and 47. So David ran to meet Goliath. He struck Goliath from his sling with a stone lodged to his forehead. And then David didn't have a sword, drew Goliath's sword, and then cut off the head of Goliath in verses 48 through 51. So you think of the accomplishment that he did. It was him and Goliath, just those two that were doing the battle. And you could say, well, it was just happen chance that the stone that he slung hit Light in the forehead and caused him to pass out, die, whatever. But it isn't. It's God's providence that this prevailed. When you stop and think concerning, and we'll look at this next week as we finish up this class, when you look at God's salvation through history, these are the physical points of salvation where God has delivered them. What would have happened if David had been killed or destroyed by Goliath? It would have upset the whole plan that God had, because as you'll see, a lot of these that we've already looked at, the lineage that God had planned for Jesus to come through was through all these various individuals. When you look at that. And so here, David is successful in his battle. God is with him. God delivers David. If he hadn't, then what would have happened to the lineage? As far as through Abraham, through David, on down through the line. So you see there that God would have had to alter what all he had talked about before as far as the lineage and how Christ was going to come. So these deliverances, yes, they're physical, but they're also more than that. It shows God's providence and still the greater plan as far as bringing Jesus into the world that he had planned from the beginning. So David kills Goliath, cuts off his head, and the rest of the Philistines flee when they see that their champion had been defeated, and Israel gave chase to them at the gates of Ekron. And so, of course, they didn't totally get rid of the Philistines. They still bothered Israel. But here you have where it was definitely God who delivered David. And the Philistines knew that it was the God of Israel that had delivered them into Israel's hand. So again, God receives the glory for it. And that's what God wants. Not only glory from his people. When you consider that the children of Israel were scared as far as them being afraid of the giant Goliath, and then when they see this young youth take Goliath down in the name of God, then the encouragement that they would have received, the glory that they would have gave God, and not only that, but then also the glory that the Philistines would have attributed to the God of Israel. As we stated very early in the beginning of the class, as we started this, that's God's purpose of deliverance or salvation. It's so he can get glory from his people and also glory from the nations about. So that's one that I picked on David and Goliath on that in that chapter. If there's no question or comment on that, we'll go to the next one then. It's found in 2 Kings, chapter 3, verses 4 through 27. And this is the kings of Israel, Judah and Edom, versus the king of Moab. Mesha was the king of Moab, and he was under servitude to Ahab, king of Israel. And he rendered to Ahab 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with wool, in verse 4. When King Ahab dies and Jehoram takes over reigning in Israel, King Mesha of Moab rebels against Israel, in verse 5. Jehoram sends to King Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, to join him in battle against the king of Moab, who was rebelling against Israel, in verse 7. So they join battle together, and they group together through the wilderness of Edom, and they're going through there, and the king of Edom joins them in going to this battle. So now you have the three kings there on that, of Israel, Judah, and Edom. And in their seven-day journey, they find no water for their cattle that followed with them. And Jehoram becomes dismayed and feels that God has called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. So there's his thought upon this, is that, well, things just don't seem to be going right. Here's some obstacles that we have that are facing us. There's no water about, so therefore, this must be God's design and God's plan that he's going to deliver us into the hands of Moab. A lot of times people get that thinking today. When things don't go just exactly the way they think or thought or whatever, then they think, well, God must be against or whatever thought and plan. Here, this is what the king of Edom thinks. Well, we're just brought together and into the hands of Moab, and he's going to take over us. But that's not the case. Jehoshaphat asked if there's a prophet of the Lord so that they could inquire of God by him. Well, Elisha was near, so the three kings go to him, and Elisha has contempt for the king, but does give regard to the king of Judah, and has a minstrel play for him, and during that time, then the hand of the Lord comes upon Elisha. Verse 13 through 15. God instructs them to make the valley full of ditches, and declares to them that they would not see wind nor rain. Go out and dig these ditches in the valley. Dig it full of ditches. Dig as many as you can dig. Fill it full of ditches. Just tear up the land. You're not going to see wind nor rain. Yet the valley would be filled with water for them and their animals. Verses 16 and 17. Elisha further tells them that this is but a light thing in the sight of God, and that he would also deliver the Moabites into their hands. It's a light thing for God to fill, you know, to bring water for your cattle and for you and for your great host and so forth. That's just a little thing, but also he's going to deliver the Moabites into your hand. In the morning, when the meat offering is being taken care of, there came water by the way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. Verse 20. Think about this. As many ditches as they could dig, then the water came in. Now, God said there's not going to be wind, there's not going to be rain. It wasn't going to be from a downpour, it wasn't going to be from a monsoon or anything like that. God provided the water some other way. It came in through Edom. How it came, Scripture doesn't say, but the water came. And it filled all the ditches. When you think about that, they may have thought, boy, we might have wanted to dug a few more ditches to have more water. But they had it all done. The water is there, filled in with the ditches. Well, the Moabites gather for battle when they hear that the three kings have come up against them. And when they rise up early in the morning, as the sun is coming up, it shines on the water that is in the ditches, so that the Moabites, all they saw was the water as blood. Verses 21 and 22. And you think about that. They look at all this water and they see it as blood. And so the thought that goes through their mind is that the three kings killed one another, and that they had fought amongst themselves, and the blood was from them. And the Moabites thought that. So they proceeded to enter the camp of the Israelites to gather the spoil. Verses 22 and 23. Well, they got a surprise. As they came to the camp of Israel, the army of the three kings rose up and smote the Moabites, even as the king of Moab tried to break through, even to the king of Edom, with 700 swordsmen. In verses 24 and 26. So you see that God delivered them again through simple means. As far as what we would think is simple, they got confused, thought that the water there was blood, that the Israelite army had killed themselves, and so they went in unprepared for battle and thought, well, we'll just go in and gather the spoil, and then Israel was there waiting and defeated them. So again, in this, we can see God's providence in his salvation and deliverance of those three kings in that battle. The next one I have is 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 8 through 23. And it's concerning Elisha and the Syrian army. The king of Syria was warring against Israel and was making his camp in various places. In verse 8 of 2 Kings chapter 6. And the Syrian camp was made aware to the king of Israel. Wherever the Syrian army was, it was getting back to the king of Israel where they were, so that he avoided the places and wasn't taken captive. And the king of Israel, through Elisha, was being warned then not to pass through these areas. It was given to Elisha to know the various places where the Syrian army was, and therefore he related to the king of Israel, and he always avoided him in that. In verse 9, well, this happened on more than two occasions, over and over again. And the king of Syria became upset and suspected one of his own as a traitor, telling information to the king of Israel. verses 10 and 11. So he was suspicious of those within his own inner circle, so to speak, that they were giving heads up to Israel where they were at so that they could be avoided. It was told to the king of Syria that Elisha, being a prophet in Israel, was telling the king of Israel where the Syrian army was, in verse 12. So after the Syrians were searching for Elisha, it was told to the king of Syria that Elisha was in Dothan, in verse 13. So once he finds out that that's where Elisha is, the Syrian king sent a great army with horses and chariots to Dothan, who, when they came by night, surrounded the city of Dothan, in verse 14. So they were there, prepared. They came at night under the cover of darkness. They had the whole city surrounded on that. Well, in the morning, the next morning, Elisha's servant rises up, and he sees the city surrounded by the Syrian horses and chariots. And it upsets him, and he's in despair, and he asks Elisha, what can they do now? Verse 15. There's nothing we can do. We're surrounded by this great host. What can we do? Elisha, what are we going to do? Elisha calmly responds by telling his servant not to fear, for there are more that be with them than those of the Syrian army. And, of course, if that's presented to you, you would kind of fathom, well, how can that be? I see a whole host of people surrounding the city, and it's just you and me, Elisha. How can there be more with us than with them as they're completely surrounded? So Elisha prays to God to open the eyes of his servant. And so in verses 16, 17, and verse 17, the Lord answers the prayer of Elisha, and his servant's eyes are open, and he saw that the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around him and Elisha. God's army was there. He couldn't see it until Elisha prayed to God, say, reveal this to his eyes, but God's army was there. The protection of God was ever present to give them deliverance. It was ever there. Even though he may not have saw it, it was still there. Because God does care for his people. So it was there. So then Elisha prays to God, and this is also encouraging the faith of his servant when he sees this whole host army. Elisha prays to God to smite the Syrian army with blindness. And so God did according to Elisha's request in verse 18. So here you have this great host of the army of Syria. They're blinded by God. And Elisha goes out and he tells them that they're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong place. You need to follow me, and that I will take you to the man whom you are seeking. Well, what can they do? They're blinded. They have no sight. They can't see. They don't know who they're speaking at. They don't know who it is or anything else. He says, well, you're in the wrong city. I'll take you over here to the place where he's at and where the person is you're speaking. Well, they were looking for Elisha, but Elisha didn't tell them, I'm the one, but I'll take you to him. So he tells them that, tells them to follow them. And in verse 19, they follow Elisha, and he leads them smack dab into Samaria, right into the host of the enemy's camp. And then once in Samaria, Elisha prays to God. And notice it's through the answer of prayer that God does this. Elisha prays to God to open the eyes of the Syrian army. And when God opened their eyes, they saw that they had been delivered to the king of Israel and his army. And then the question is brought about, well, do we go to battle? Do we kill them? Do we slay them? And Elisha kind of rebukes them a little bit that they shouldn't do this. But yet he tells the king of Israel to feed the Syrian army and to send them back to their master, which he does in verses 21 through 23. So the lessons that we find in this, again, is that God delivered, no matter what the odds were. He delivered Elisha and his servant, two people, from the whole host of the Syrian army that had them completely surrounded. The other lesson is, also we see that God's army was there, invisible to people, but God's army was there to do his bidding, to protect his children and watch over them, which is what they were doing and what they did. So That is with Elisha and the Syrian army, as far as what God had done for them. The next one is in 2 Kings, the 6th chapter, verses 24 through the 7th chapter, verse 20. And it's concerning Ben-Hadad, and he set siege against Samaria. And Ben-Hadad, being the king of Syria, brings all his host and goes to Samaria, and he besieges the city, in verse 24. And the besieging of the city produces such dire consequences in the city that the famine is so great that the inhabitants resort to eating their children, verses 25 through 29. You have the story there of the two mothers, and one had cooked hers for her and her friend, and then it was her friend's turn, and she didn't want to do that. And so they go to the king about it, and when the king hears concerning what is happening, he becomes distraught over it, and he becomes to the point that he sent a messenger to Elisha that he was going to take Elisha's life, verses 31 and 32. Elisha tells the elders that are with him that by tomorrow, at about this same time, the siege would be lifted and the famine would be over. In chapter 7, verse 1. They've been there, been besieged, and been to the point that they had already ran out of resources. The famine was so great that they were resorting to cannibalism in eating their young, somewhat like the siege of Jerusalem was when that happened, that they resorted to eating their young. That it's there, but Elisha says, well, you know, by this time tomorrow, it's going to be such that if you were paying $20 for a loaf of bread, tomorrow at this time it's going to be worth a penny. You're going to pay a penny. Just in extreme terms like that, just to point it out. He said, what you're paying for today is going to be way cheaper by this time tomorrow. It's going to be a whole lot less. So, that's what he tells him, that it's going to be lifted and be over. At this time, there's four lepers that evening who were in a bind as to what to do. Of course, being leopards, they were outside the city. They could wait where they were, outside the city, and sit there and die. Or they could go into the city and die in the siege. Or they could go to the host of the Syrians and die. Either one. So they had to pick out which one they wanted to do. They said, well, it would be better for us to go to the Syrians. At least if they don't kill us, they've got food. We can eat. We can survive. If we go into the city, we're going to die because of the famine. If we stay out here, we're going to die too because we don't have any provision. So they chose to go to the Syrian host in hopes that they would be saved alive. And at twilight that evening, they came to the camp of the Syrians. And in verse 5, they find it empty and deserted. And it seems strange to them that happened. I mean, here you have this great host who had been besieging the city for this long time, and then when these lepers go out there, it's empty. It's deserted. Everybody's gone. What had happened that night, God had made the hosts of the Syrians to hear a noise of chariots and horses, being of a great host. And they heard that noise of the horses and the chariots, and it was such to the extent that they thought that there was a vast, great host out there. The Syrians believed that the king of Israel had gathered the armies of the Hittites and the Egyptians to fight against them. So they left their camp and they fled in the middle of the night. And they fled for their life, verses 6 and 7. How God accomplished that? That's God's ways that he did it. But they thought that they heard this sound, and that's what went through their minds, is that they had a great army that was against them, surrounding them, and so they started fleeing for their life. The leopards find food, drink, silver, gold, raiment, all in abundance in this empty camp and strung along the way. And they report this to the king of Israel in verses 8 through 11. Now, you being a king, what would you think? The great army of Syria had been there besieging you for all this time. And all of a sudden now, these four people are telling you, well, it's deserted. The king thought, okay, well, this is a trap. They're doing this. They left the camp. They're hiding somewhere because you just wouldn't leave your camp and leave all your provisions and everything else. So they're off somewhere hiding. And as soon as we come out and think that they're gone and do whatever, we're going to be attacked. So that's what the king of Israel believes, that it's a trap laid by the Syrian host. And he sent a small group to see if it was as reported by the four leopards that they talked about in verses 12 through 14. The hosts go out, and to their surprise, they find that it was true. And the people went out and gathered all that the Syrians had left. And the people had a great abundance in verses 15 and 16. In such great abundance that, again, the economy was drove down, that what the prophet had said, what Elijah said, did come true. That very day at that hour, that everything was tremendously cheaper because of all this great abundance that they had. If you remember, this was a story about the man that told Elisha, well, I don't think that's going to happen. And Elisha told him, well, it's going to happen. You're going to see it, but you're not going to taste of any of it. And the king of Israel had set him in front of the gate. And when the people heard about all the abundance stuff, there was more or less a stampede. And they went out and they killed him as they went over him. So he did see it, but he didn't get to taste of any of it. God again delivered the children of Israel by his means and by his way. It doesn't say here that he was asked on his behalf by the king of Israel. That's not recorded. But I'm sure that was somewhere in his thoughts of asking God for deliverance from this great besiegement, from this sieging of the city by the Syrians, that they be removed. We know other kings did ask for that. But how God accomplished it, that's within his means. And that's something that you have to keep in mind, that no matter what comes across in your life, no matter what you're faced with, God can choose any method, way, or means to accomplish his providence so that you can be delivered from any harm or destruction. And the purpose of that is to give God the glory and honor and praise. That's what it's for. So that's on that one there. On that one. When I said that, when you look at this, some of them, before I get into this next one, because it's a little bit longer, we're about out of time. When you look at this, when you think about Abraham, we already looked at Abraham. It was appointed that the lineage of Jesus was to come through Abraham. Abraham was spared many times in his life. He was spared when the Egyptian king, he was afraid for his life. That didn't come about. God took care of that, provided that he was able to survive it. So Abraham is spared that. You have Jacob and Esau. They are at odds with one another. And Esau sets about to kill Jacob. Well, it doesn't happen, because he flees to another territory. Again, God working his providence that through that lineage, it's going to continue on. Before that, after that, you have, we already looked at, the taking of Jericho. Jesus is through the lineage of Rahab. Rahab was spared out of that city. She was spared because of her hiding the spies and her putting the thread there. And if you remember, the charge that was given to them was that when you go in and destroy the city, Rahab and whoever's in her house is going to be saved. So Rahab is spared. She's mentioned in Matthew, the first chapter, in the lineage. You have Ruth, who was spared. She left her homeland. She came with Naomi, came back. She's trying to survive, not die of famine or whatever. And Boaz, through the providence of him, Boaz takes her to wife. David is through both of those, through Rahab and Ruth. David is through both of those, the lineage of David. We looked at this evening. David is spared in fighting Goliath. So you can see all through here God's workings, not only with his people, but also working his plan that he has, that he had this set in mind. And it doesn't mean that he altered But he did, through his providence, deliver them. Because he delivered David. He delivered Abraham. He delivered Rahab. He delivered Ruth. He delivered all of them. And through that lineage, Christ came. So his plan was took care of there. I know CL has talked about that a lot, about God's plan going through there and what he has done through his providence to make that plan work. And that's what he has done. And then you can go through and look at all many other examples and see how God has interacted. There was a remnant of Israel that came back. They weren't all destroyed in the captivity. There was a remnant that came back. Again, God's plan that through that remnant, Jesus would be established. So you see that even God had higher plans, and he makes that work in his salvation through history, that in the spiritual sense, he accomplished that we could have that salvation through Jesus. When you look at Jesus, why wasn't he destroyed? By God's providence again. Herod set out to destroy him when he was a young baby. Wasn't able to be accomplished. He was sent off into Egypt. He was delivered because God's plan was still working on that. So it's just some thoughts to think about concerning God's salvation. Yes, you can look at these battles and think, well, you know, what really was the significance of the Battle of Jericho? Well, yes, it was part of the Promised Land, the first city, but it was also one of the defining moments, too, of the deliverance of Rahab, that through her and continuing on down, the lineage of Christ, Jesus, would come. So, just some side thoughts on that. We'll go ahead and start next week on the next one, and next week will be the end of it, and we'll go ahead and stop there this evening.